Let's get back into Genesis chapter number 28 at verse number 18, where we're seeing what happened the morning after God appears to Jacob at his campsite near Luz. This would have been probably on the maybe second or third night of his travel from his home to Haran to find a wife amongst his cousins. And you remember what precipitated this. He, at his mother's prompting, had deceived his father into offering the verbal blessing of the firstborn. Then Esau becomes enraged from this and even noises about somehow that he's going to kill his twin brother Jacob after dad has passed away. And of course, they're all thinking that that's coming very soon. And so Rachel jumps into the situation and prompts Yitzhak to send Jacob to Haran to find a wife amongst his cousins. But it would appear that he, despite being the heir now of the tent encampment and being the one on whom the blessings of the firstborn have been officially given, he is penalized evidently by dad with having to go on this bridal search with only the clothes on his back, the sandals on his feet, and the staff in his hand, and a few basic supplies. He doesn't have any of his father's wealth with him. That will be important to the story later. And so at this campsite, probably very close to where Abraham had his second campsite in the Promised Land, he has a vision of God. We refer to this as Jacob's ladder vision. I think more likely you should picture it more like stairs. But there is God, and God tells him that, yes, the Abrahamic blessing has been attached to him, and that he will be safely brought back to this promised land, and the blessings will be fulfilled. And so verse 18 tells us what Jacob officially did the next morning after he's figured out that this is a special place. Early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that had been put under his head and he set it up for a pillar or a marker, and he poured oil on top of it. This is an act of sanctifying it. This is an act of dedicating it to God specifically. And he called the name of that place Bethel, which means the house of God. Not the house of a God generically, but the house of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and now Jacob. But Moses tells us the name of that city was Luz at first, which has something to do with almond trees. Maybe that's what it was known for growing. And then Jacob made a vow. Now, this is where we're picking up with new material. Jacob made a vow in the name of God at this place. If God will be with me, which God has already said he would be, and will keep me in this way that I go, so guide me, protect me, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear. So note that some of these things are very self-centric, but I think we can safely say that for Jacob, this faith in God as a personal God is something new to him. His grandfather, who he knew for about 15 years, and actually he was 15 years old when grandfather Abraham died. So probably only a few years was he cognizant is remembering his grandfather's deep and abiding faith in the one true God. And then his father, Yitzhak, he knows that his father, Yitzhak, believes in this one true God. But Jacob, we don't know. We don't know whether or not he's ready to have made that personal commitment until right about now, when God appears to him personally. And so he is focused more on the idea, well, if God keeps his promises and takes care of me, feeds me, clothes me, verse 21, so that I can come again to my father's house in peace, then he who is shall be my God. So he says, if God keeps his promises, yes, he will be my personal God. And this stone which I have set up for a pillar or a monument shall be God's house. So he makes the commitment not only to adopt God Most High, El Elyon, or El Shaddai, which means my God, the God of my chest. He says, I will make a special shrine here. And just to jump ahead of the story, he does exactly that. He does make a special shrine at this site. And then later in Israeli history, when the two kingdoms split apart, the northern kingdom actually builds a full-fledged temple on this site. Now, unfortunately, they put a golden calf in there representing the creator God from an Egyptian standpoint. But it does become a full-fledged temple eventually. And of all you give me, I will give a full tenth to you. Now, this is, I think, the second time in the book of Genesis that we've seen a tithe specifically cited as something done from a man to God. The first time it was after Abraham had rescued Lot and devoted one-tenth of the war spoils to God at Salem through the priest of God Most High, Melchizedek. Here, Jacob apparently commits himself and all his descendants. We can't be positive about that second part, but his descendants, who are reading this many centuries later, they are going to be required by law to give one-tenth of their income every year to God. And so it appears that that starts here, that Jacob puts himself on the hook as if God takes care of me, then me and my family, we're going to pay a tenth of income every year to God. Chapter 29. So Jacob went on his journey, and he came to the land of the people of the east. Now, Mesopotamia is counted as part of the east. Put that in capital letter T, capital letter E, with quotation marks around it. It is the place where Aram is located, and where Haran, inside of Aram, is located. It takes about 2 weeks' walk time, roughly, for Jacob to make this journey. And once he arrives, this is what happens. As he looked, so he can see Haran there in front of him. It would have been some sort of obvious city. We know that Haran of the ancient world, going way back, has unique beehive dome houses in it made of clay. It's possible that that goes all the way back to this time period. And so maybe he sees the beehive houses behind a clay wall. And so he looked, and he then saw a well in the field, meaning outside of the walls. And behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying beside it, for out of that well the flocks were watered. Now this catches him off guard, as we'll see in a little bit, because it's already well into the mid-morning time, moving toward noon. It's the sun's been up for a while, and it's getting hotter and hotter. And so the normal procedure, as far as Jacob understands it, and he was raised, you know, in an encampment, a tent city that raises sheep and goats and cattle. You get those animals watered early in the morning and get them out into the grasslands and let them, you know, soak up as much food as they can before the high heat hits. And so he's maybe taken a little bit back by the fact that here's a well. It's probably seen by curbing stones that are raised up off of the ground level. And he sees these animals in three different groups just kind of laying around. And then he notes that there's a stone on the well's mouth that was large. So some sort of probably flat, heavy stone, maybe some sort of slate that is being used, not exactly as a locking mechanism, but kind of. It's the idea of keeping foreign objects out of the water and making sure that only authorized people get to use this well. The stone is really big and heavy, and so under most circumstances, it would take a couple of hefty guys in order to slide this thing out of the way enough that you can start putting your rope buckets down into the water and then put the water into the troughs that are no doubt nearby. By the way, this does not appear to be the same well that his mother was using 98 years ago or so now, when she was watering camels out of a well that was below ground level, and she was having to carry it up and put it in the troughs. If it is the same well, then there's been major improvements made to it. So when all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll or slide the stone from the mouth of the well and then water the sheep and then put the stone back in its place over the mouth of the well. So Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where do you come from?" And they said, "We're from Haran." And he said, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "Yes, we know him." And he said to them, "Is it well with him?" And keep in mind what I just said. It's been 97 years, 98 years probably, since Rachel left here to go south. And we speculated at the time that Laban was her baby brother, her younger brother. And so that means clearly that he is in his second century, 117, 118, somewhere much older than the average human being of this time period. But he's part of this long-lived family of Terah and Nahor and Abraham and Bethuel and now Laban. They said back to him, "Oh, it's well. And see, oh, that's Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep." So God works it out so that coming toward him at this exact moment with her own little flock of sheep is his cousin, Rachel. Rachel's name, by the way, from Hebrew, has the idea of a ewe, a female sheep. And so it's funny, in the Hebrew here, we basically have a sheep acting as a shepherdess. Verse number 7, he said, "Behold, it is still high day. It's the day is great, is what he says literally. Isn't it time for the livestock to be? It's not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water those sheep and go pasture them. So he says, you guys shouldn't be here still. You should be out there in the grasslands by now. So why don't you get these sheep watered and go? But they said, oh, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well, and then we water the sheep. And so they tell him what the local logistics are. This is a public well used for watering livestock. And so apparently they agree that they wait until all of the shepherds and shepherdesses arrive to water their flocks. Then a couple of them, maybe three or four of them, shove the locking stone to the side. Everybody takes their turn watering their flocks. And then once all the flocks are well watered, they lock the thing back up again and everybody scatters to their particular grassland assignment. And so he's like, wow, that doesn't seem like a good way to work. What happens if people are late? Such as apparently Rachel's running late. Well, everybody's just hanging around as the day gets hotter and hotter. So verse number 10. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Now, this is rather intriguing, I think. Remember that his mother watered 10 camels as part of her being selected as the wife of Isaac. Here we have Jacob watering a multitude of flocks, but particularly his cousin's flock, which is technically his uncle's flock, so that he will end up marrying Rachel. And so it takes him a little while, I've no doubt about that, but it also shows how strong he is. He's about 77, but don't think of that in our way of thinking of 77. For him, for as long as he lives, it's like he's in his 30s, his later 30s, but in his 30s, and he is a very active man. I mean, he's been working with things in his own family's encampment and probably taking care of animals, so he's not a wimp. He's probably got some pretty serious muscles on him. And so he shoves this rock aside, takes care of all this, waters all the sheep, which takes time. And then, after all of that, Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. Now, the kissing would have been that cultural hug sort of thing, the greeting. There is a little bit of strangeness here to it. I'm sure that Rachel and the others would have been shocked at first if he came up to her and grabbed her by the shoulders and did that whole kissing of the two cheeks. But after he did that, and no doubt everybody went, he began to cry. And once he can speak, well, Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman, that he was Rebekah's son. So he reveals to her, I'm not a stranger, I'm your cousin. I'm your Aunt Rebekah's boy, here for a visit. And so she ran immediately and told her father Laban about this. Now, how old is she? Again, we can only guess. Because of the long-lived nature of this family, marriage gets delayed. We know that Yitzhak didn't get married until he was 40. Here is Jacob, who has a brother that didn't get married until 40, and he's at 77 now himself, and he's not married. And so it's possible that the 20s would be the low range for how old Rachel is, that she may be approaching marriageable age in that 20s decade. But that's just a guess. So she runs off, tells her dad, and as soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he's all excited that his nephew, the son, the adult son of his sister, who moved away almost a century ago, is here in town. And he welcomes him and plays presents a whole bunch of hospitality to him. Notice again that even though we can be certain that Laban's got to be close to 120 or slightly older than that, he is still quite spry himself. But based on the ratios that we've been talking about, it's probably like he's in his 50s, maybe his 60s. And I'm 64. I'm still pretty spry myself, folks. So Jacob told Laban all these things. What things? The story of his family. What happened during the last century. And Laban said to him, "Oh, surely you are bone, my bone, my flesh." That echoes the earlier part of the book of Genesis about what Adam said about Eve, right? So this is the idea of close family. And so he stayed with him for a month. So about 4 weeks, 30 days, they hang out. And apparently Jacob does what a lot of times you do when you're visiting your family for an extended period of time. You pitch in and help out. Some of my fond memories are going out to the family farm and interacting with my grandfather and my uncles, and my dad, and taking care of the pigs, and taking care of the cattle, and milking, and mending fences, and cutting wood, and cutting posts, and things like that. We did it as a family. I didn't live on that farm, but when I visited, hey, I pitched in. I thought it was cool. I enjoyed it. And plus, you know, you're helping your family out. But eventually, Laban realizes that there needs to be a change in status here. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you're my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing?" I mean, we can't just keep going on with you doing free work around here. You're evidently sticking around because your mom told you to stick around here until she told you it was safe to come home. So tell me, what shall your wages be? So he enters into contract negotiations with him for work. And that's when we find out that Jacob was very smitten with his first female cousin he met. He was knocked down by her. She's a knockout, as we say. And so he gets his heart taken away, as we would also say, by her. And no doubt he's been developing a relationship with her over the past 4 weeks. And so we have the annotation here in verse 16 from Moses. Now Laban had two daughters. Now he's got sons, but their names are not nearly as important. He had two daughters. The name of the older daughter, and these are daughters that are still at home. These are ones that are to be married yet. The older was Leah. The young name of the younger, we already know, is Rachel. And then we're told this: Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. Now, it's clear from the way it's presented here that the intention for us to understand is that Rachel was much more beautiful than Leah. And that people would tend to look at Rachel much faster than they'd look at Leah. But what is this about her eyes? The wording is kind of hard to sort out. Her name, though, might help. Her name in Hebrew means exhausted or tired. And I think it's possible that it might even be a representation of sleepy-eyed. Now, we know that there is a medical condition that sometimes presents at birth where the child has droopy upper eyelids. The eyelids hang farther down than God designed, right down almost over the pupil area, sometimes even below the pupil area. And so it gives the appearance of the person being very sleepy looking. And so this condition is sometimes accompanied by an eye discharge, a continual eye discharge. And so that might match exactly what's going on in her life. And one of the other things we know about this condition is that the person very often has to tip their head backwards in order to see where they're walking and what they're doing. And so it might be something like that, that Leah has got an issue that makes her less beautiful in physical form than her younger sister, Rachel.